Yeah, and like, is anything specifically, maybe not specifically, but any kind of example you can give of like how you saw healing maybe in another person that you were like, huh, maybe like I didn't see it that way when I was dealing with my own healing, or I didn't see it that way at work. Like some aha moment that you live through working with victims and survivors too.
I think one of the people, well, two of the people that I had the extreme honor of walking alongside for many, many years because their court cases took quite a long time. I think so, lots of people will critique the criminal legal system and say that court takes a really, really long time and that it's unfair to people. But I think two of the people that I got the chance to walk aside really helped me change that narrative. I was alongside somebody for almost 3 years before we got to court, and she had an opportunity to testify. And the changes and the integration that happened for her from the time we met in hospital until the time she sat on the stand at Supreme Court was so significant, that I think it's really reframed, like, just that time, we do need time, you know? Yes, it can suck to have to wait for your court date, and it can create a lot of anxiety. And I also think that having the time to unravel yourself from the ways in which rape culture has impacted and influenced your life as a survivor requires like time and love and tenderness and like the ability to move in and out of focusing on these pieces. And so I think it was, yeah, just a really important piece so that when I hear people saying like we should be pushing, for quicker trials, like, we should be moving people through the courts at a different pace, it really does give me the opportunity to say, listen, like, yes, the person who's caused harm deserves, a timely trial, and having survivors have to sit and wait for a long time really does impact them. And, there's this other thing about integration so that people can find the language to describe their experience, can move through stages of grief to come to a place to have understanding about what they're then living with from the legacy of harm they've experienced, and are able to like show up and be the best witnesses that they can and want to be. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty big piece that I've learned over the years for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like it links to with like this whole idea of having time for yourself to process everything,
Yes.
like not rushing yourself to and be able to, as you said, to like grieve in peace,
Yeah.
feel all your feelings.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why like place like Salado to like this contention and this community involvement is so important too for the healing process of people. And I feel that like sets me too for the next question. Since more about like your professional experience in this case too, and how does community involvement impact this individual healing process, especially after trauma or violence? What role do you think the community plays in creating a safe space for healing and justice?
Oh man. Yeah.
It is a big one.
Well, I just think it is, it's everything, honestly. And I'm sure you've heard me say this, but sexual violence is systemic violence, right? It's not happening in isolation. It's not one or two people. We're looking at harm that is being caused, that is part of the fabric of our society. And it's really hard to heal from something that is systemic individually, because you know, alongside of that, you've got a whole bunch of narratives around people who have experienced harm in this realm being responsible for that harm. And so when you are alone with that information being the dominant voice that you're hearing, it's very easy for people to find it very challenging to stay on this earth when they are being seen as the one that's ultimately responsible for what's happened to them. If you move that person into community and into spaces where they hear stories from other people who, of course, did not experience the exact same thing as them, but there are echoes that feel so familiar, and it's like balm. It's like soothing balm to be in a room with people that you instantly feel like they understand, you know, what you've experienced, and being able to be there with each other and be supported by a container that allows for really important conversations to happen is what healing has to look like, you know? And of course, we deserve like individual spaces to work through the like very kind of detail-y stuff that emerges for us personally at our intersections and based on all of our lived experience, maybe before or after. But I really do think community and building community with and for survivors is one of the most important ways that we can heal.
Yeah. And I think something really important you say to say this idea of hearing stories, like opening up the floor for conversation, for communicating, not having this as a taboo topic that no one wants to talk about, no one wants to touch it.
Right.
But having this conversation is so important for not only for survivors, but like for everyone else to understand what is going on too. Understand that this is not just a minimal problem that happens every here and there, you know? But how more like how it's like the living situation of many people too. It's the daily life of a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think like you touched on a really important point too about how it is systemic. It's not only like a private problem. It's like this thing within our justice system, with our education system, with our health system. And I wanted to ask you too, like since many survivors not only have to carry this pain from the trauma and their experience, but also for the responses that follow after, how can transformative justice offer more expansive healing-centered responses to harm than traditional punitive systems?
Well, I think the really like important work that's being done within like transformative and restorative principled approaches is that it looks further than just the person that's been harmed and the person that's responsible for the harm. It also looks at like the conditions that have allowed that to happen in the first place, and whether that's within a relationship or within a family system or within community, it looks at those like primary, secondary, and tertiary pieces. And is also not just about, you know, forgiveness or compassion. It's also about like boundaries and accountability. And so I think if we were able to build our institutions and our schools and our families around the idea that we are intra-connected, and that we need to build systems within all of these, you know, primary, secondary, tertiary ways that we are with each other that are rooted in the ability to show up when we cause harm and not be seen as bad or being blamed, but really looking at, what allowed me to behave in this way? What supports do I need? What is the need that was unmet that had me behaving in this way? And then what do I need to do differently next time? How might you want me or not want me in your life? Like, those are all practices that we can start, like I said, with my kiddo. One of the biggest teaching pieces for me was when I was tickling him when he was little, and I was thinking about, raising. I have a boy, who's like very cis boy energy. And I used to tickle fight with him. And, one of my biggest commitments to him is raising him in a like consent-based relationship, because I know how important that is. And there were times where he would yell, "Stop, stop tickling me," and I wouldn't. And it dawned on me one day that these are the little tiny puzzle pieces that build consent culture, but also the ways that I need to be accountable to him, right? He was telling me to stop, and I just thought it was funny, so I kept going. And for me to come back to him and say, "Hey, listen, you told me to stop and I didn't, and that wasn't okay. And so, if I do this again, it's not your responsibility, but please call me out on that, right? And I'm gonna make sure that I'm also thinking about my actions when you're using your voice, because I want you to keep using your voice." And so every opportunity we have within our relationships, within our families, and within our workplaces, within our communities, to start practicing in those ways with each other. Again, it's like the personal is political. Every time we take those actions and we practice them, they have ripple effects, and they can grow the ways that we can have a much more like healing and restorative and transformative centered culture.
Yeah, and I feel like the transformative part of it is really key too. Like this is
Yes.
a war, like this is a moment when we need to transform to rebuild. And as you say too,
Yes.
like with your kid, you're teaching them about having a voice from a really young age. But
Yeah.
like I feel like many people, like older generations, don't have that, never were able to have that voice. So I think this is a time to be like, hey, like let's rebuild this person that we are. Let's find the voice that we never had or we might have had at one point and it was shut down. So it's that like, as you say, like it's transformative, is finding the key to open
Yeah.
this voice of a sketch years ago.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think, we have older folks calling the crisis line that are calling and using their voice for the first time. And the fact that we've, built a space at Salal so that people can call and actually be seen for the first time is like such an important piece, about being in community and building those spaces for community as well.
Absolutely. And like we're sadly running out of time. So I have one more question that like maybe not for like answering right now because we don't have the time for it, but more a question for reflection, not only for you, for me, for everyone listening to. That is more about if healing were truly centered in our core culture, what do you imagine will feel different at work, in schools, in institution, in our daily lives? How can we as listeners start to build or be part of healing-centered communities in everyday life? And I feel like we'll leave this question open for like everyone listening and for you and us to go on our day and think about this too. But is there anything else you want to like share with us today? Any conclusions that you have come from our conversation?
No, I guess just to tag on that to that beautiful question that, love is not scarce. And that, we can choose how we want to respond, anytime.
Yeah, and I feel like that's why like having place like Salal is so important too. Well, thank you so much, Dahlia, for your time and words today. It was truly fascinating to talk with you today and to have this conversation. And for everyone listening too, remember healing isn't something we carry alone. It grows through community and care. Thank you for joining us for Healing Together, a special podcast created in the context of SFU Sexual Assault Awareness Month 2026. You can follow us at SFU SVSPO to learn more about our work and our support in the SFU community. And also check out Salal's socials and Salal's webpage. They have a lot of information and services in there too. We hope this conversation sparks reflection and connection. And as Prentice Hemphis remind us, what would it mean to center healing in everything we create? Until next time, take care and take care of one another.
This project was made possible through the guidance, technical support, and generous hosting of CJSF 90.1 FM. We wish to recognize the assistance offered by CJSF volunteers, and our gratitude also goes to Duane Woods at the SFU Center for Educational Excellence for editing and episode transcription. If you or someone you know in the SFU community has been impacted by sexualized violence, please reach out to the SVSPO at our website, www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence. To learn more about our events and resources, you can follow us on Instagram at sfu.svspo. Thank you for being part of this conversation and for joining us in community.
And that was part one of a special series called Healing Together, produced by the SFU Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. And we're happy to bring that to you. It's a six-part series, and you'll be hearing more of those on Speak Ups over the next few weeks. Thanks to the SVSPO for that. Once again, if you want to find out more information about the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office or this series, you can check out their website, which is www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence-html, and you'll you can just Google SFU SVSPO. That'll also get you there, and check them out and check out more of the series, and we'll have more of that coming up in the coming weeks. We're going to be back in a moment with Peter R.H.
Talk about Megyn Kelly, her 180 degree change over 10 years.
But first we're going to listen to some sweet sounds from Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Urban ecologist Murray Burgess has always been interested in wildlife. But she first felt a spark for birds on a college field trip to watch spring migration from a beach town on the Gulf Coast of Alabama.
It was a really hot, really difficult day, and I was just like, oh my goodness, I'm done. And I sat down against a tree, and I was the first person to see the painted bunting across the street. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's so colorful, look at that.
The painted bunting was a dazzling male with blue, red, yellow, and green feathers. And perhaps more amazing than his plumage was everything this sparrow-sized bird had to overcome just to get there.
Such a long migration trip, had to have all of the fuel and the energy to get across the Gulf Coast, had to avoid all the predators, and it was also avoiding the cars on the road as we were right there.
Now, Murray studies how urban environments impact birds, advocates for safety and inclusivity in the outdoors, and writes children's books that inspire families to enjoy birds together. Murray's advice for getting into birding?
Just pick your favorite spot. It doesn't have to be like super naturey or super remote. Just wherever you feel comfortable. It's like meeting new friends. Like you just kind of start hanging out, and the more and more you hang out, the more that relationship starts to build.
For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
Hey, do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, I have perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
So Megyn Kelly Peter. Well, before we get into that, you're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM, coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain here in Burnaby, BC. It's sunny and scenic up here on the top of the mountain. If you're down below, you may be stuck in the fog, but we got the sun up here. Tune in, stick around at 11 o'clock. Democracy Now! Is coming up. And Peter, so Megyn Kelly is one of the more prominent broadcasters in the U.S.
Well, it's interesting.
Media yes. environment.
And she's still surviving on the podcast as being a force to be reckoned with, as they say. She had an NBC morning show, and then they said she had made... it's what the irony is that I think she was treated unfairly by NBC. What she said was that if
so this was 10 years ago? Because she was...
not quite.
She was with MSNBC, I think.
She was with Fox News.
Yeah.
And then up until 2016. And then because she came out against Trump, her thing was that you have insulted Rosie O'Donnell. And then it just blew up. And because I don't get Fox News, I looked at all these magazines. I said, who is this woman? What is this? And I thought there was something phony about her. And now it's 180 degrees. She supports Trump. She actually has three times insulted women because they're supposedly ugly. She has said that the protesters for Palestine are... Have you ever noticed how actually ugly these people are? And see, somebody else said something on her YouTube post. Oh, by the way, here's a little advice. Use some makeup or something, or shut up. I mean, it's 180 degrees from 10 years ago.
So do you think she was a mean girl in high school? Has this always been who she is?
I think I'm just going to talk about the last 10 years.
Okay.
And it makes me wonder what happened to her.
Right.
I think that 10 years ago she was, I don't know what. I mean, she sort of, J.D. Vance supposedly didn't like Trump 10 years ago either. So, yeah. I mean, now have we got that sound thing ready? We might as well play that. This has just been very, what?
Well, it's on your...
It's on my thing.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm just going to tell you what she said. We went through all this hassle here at the station. Who's that woman that got shot at Minnesota?
Oh, okay. Rachel Wood, shot by the ICE officers in her car.
And
a week ago Monday. No, a week ago, I guess it was on the weekend.
So on her podcast, she said... One of her last words were, "Oh, it's okay, dude. We're not angry at you." So then Megyn Kelly goes, "Oh, she said it in a sarcastic way," and then she said a few other things. You know, just take her word for it. We went through all this trouble to get it. We're not. We don't have it. But she was saying all these reasons why the ICE police. Were actually right in what they did, a total justification of it, including something that no one else has said, that her things was done in sarcasm. I mean, I don't... Do you kind of get that, Magnus? Do you... I mean, it's sort of a... I don't really see how that's right. So take it from us. Go to her podcast or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's another thing on her show a few weeks back when you know, about the Epstein files, where she was making excuses, saying, well, you know, it wasn't so bad because, you know, they were, it's not like they were doing stuff with 8-year-olds. They're doing stuff with 15-year-olds, and that's not so bad. And it's just sort of the weird logic that, you know, and apparently she's a parent and has daughters of her own, but somehow she can make the connection if it's people she supports.
Well, the thing
she can make excuses for, you know, interfering with minors, but...
Well, this wasn't her 10 years ago as such. I mean, see, this was not what she was like. And I think that Donald Trump enables people to have a more hardened outlook. Now, Lutnick, is that the Secretary of Commerce?
Yeah.
Like, he actually, it's either the Senate or House of Representatives, when you're a, you get the appointee, you got to talk to them. It takes 4 hours or something. And one of the senators or Congress people said to him, you of course realize about in the auto industry how it, you know, there's a lot of back and forth between the United States. And he bold-facedly lies, saying, oh, yes, I recognize that and all that, which he doesn't, mm-hmm. because when it comes into it. So what it is that with Trump, you sort of have to go along exactly what he says. Like, you know, the thing about Lutnick, he never makes an actual independent statement. He said, well, we have to go back. We'll see what Trump says about that. And with Trumpism, in the case of Megyn Kelly, she's against him. In fact, it was a pretty slight thing. I say, you call Rosie O'Donnell ugly, don't you think that's bad? And then she winds up calling everybody that doesn't agree with Trump ugly now.
It makes me wonder about the, you know, the corrosive nature of working in some of these places. Like, 'cause she was at Fox News for a long time.
Right.
And I think to get along there, and I think this is true of many environments where people need to do this, you know, your success depends on sort of towing the party line, as it were, right? Your success within the organization, your success as a, in her case, as a host and broadcaster, really depends a lot on, well, depends entirely on sticking with the right party line. It's not about having an independent ideas and being a contrarian.
But that's 10 years ago, that was what made her special. She was bucking the Fox News line. And that's why she got NBC job. And actually what she was she was just became boring. That's kind of really what NBC and by the way, I kind of take her side on why NBC let her go. She made the statement, "We're Halloween, if you're dressed as another race, but you're doing it as the character," she said, "I don't see anything wrong with that." Now, I take her side on that because Billy Crystal in the 1980s did Sammy Davis Jr. Mm-hmm. as a white person.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the thing. In fact, that was on NBC also. And so was Amos and Andy in 1929 to 1948 before they went to CBS.
Attitudes have changed a bit since 1948.
I know, NBC was basically founded on a racist program. But, do you think Billy Crystal was racist in the 80s for doing the Sammy Davis imitation? No, because he did other imitations. So I actually take her side on that. But maybe she just, she just hardened herself to being the biggest Trumper you ever saw. And she is the ultimate Trumper.
Like I say, I think, you know, for a lot of these folks, I mean, your success depends on, like I say, going along with whatever the message is that you're supposed to be sharing. You know, and sometimes people really believe it. Sometimes I think this is what, you know, I want to be successful here, and this is the most important thing to me, so I'm going to do whatever it takes. And they sort of lose, you know, they lose their moral compass if they had a strong one in the first place, right? And I think there's there's a sort of corrosive feedback in that where you rationalize what you're doing and you tell yourself it's okay, or, you know, this other thing is more important, and there's a sort of feedback loop which I think sort of can break down your moral center if you commit to that. If, you know, it's like, I will do whatever it takes. I will.
Well, I think she just wound up believing in the Trump line. Because as an independent podcaster, she can say what she wants. She'd probably get more popular if she went against Trump at this point. But anyway.
Well, you know, you see it in other contexts, you know. I mean, as you mentioned J.D. Vance earlier, you have Ted Cruz where Trump viciously insulted Cruz's wife in a political attack during the way back in the early campaign. Cruz is a huge Trump supporter. Anyway, that's all the time we have. Thanks. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up right now.
Hi, I'm